Hello and welcome to another edition of Turned Out a Punk Footnotes. I am one of your hosts, Damien Abraham, and your other host, as always, is Chris O'Toole.
That's a very punk intro. Nice.
Thanks, buddy. Well, that's I'm thinking of starting a band.
Yeah. Another band? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Try it out. See what it's like. And then maybe stick with it. Maybe stick with this thing. But that'll be my singing voice now.
I would be very into hearing a record of you sing like that the entire time. Would be great.
Well, that's one sold.
It's kind of like you know when you hear like children or like toddlers or babies kind of. That's the cadence. It's very impressive.
Well, you got to remember who I hang out with most of the time.
Sure enough, but
you know my biggest musical influences now are under the age of 10.
Nice.
All three of them.
I think that's what they mean by like primitive punk, though. Is yeah. Now you're really channeling it properly.
Well, like I don't know if you've ever heard "My Old Man's a Ginger" by Gacy and the Boys, my yes. Very offensive yep. Pseudo punk in character song that I put on the Davidstown comp. But I played every instrument on that goddamn song. So if you want to hear a real primitive punk record, you better sign this guy.
The other funny part about that, do we want to get into some deep, whatever you want to say here, like footnote material and what you just mentioned?
What's the footnote material?
The footnote on that was your initial proposed band name.
For Bergenfield 4.
For Bergenfield 4, correct.
That's right.
Which you then, like you're saying, utilized on the, what is it called again? The fake comp? What is it?
Davidstown.
Davidstown comp released yep. by Fucked Up Record Store Day, what, like 2010, maybe? Nine? Or yeah, earlier?
I think
actually, earlier, let's look this up. We're going to go to the resource. We're going to see what year it was released.
How embarrassing that I don't. That I have to go to the resource to check out the name.
To be fair, for your own band, i.e., Fucked Up, I'm not surprised in the least that you're not sure.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of records.
A lot of goddamn records, unfortunately.
So let's see here. 76 entries, by the way, just so you're just to throw that out there. I can't even find the bloody thing. Where is it?
Is Davidstown. It's like the third L. It's on LPs.
It is under the main LP. Yeah. Oh, no, David's Plan. A lot of Davids going on in your discography, by the way.
Cheap ass record now.
I was going to mention, too.
Going for so much money, but now it's
Drysdale Garden City, by the way, is a great late Fucked Up single for people who don't know.
Is that the Jonah song that Jonah wrote?
It's just a great single, I believe so, if I remember correctly, but I just remember liking it. I saw it flip past it the other day in my collection. I was like, yep, that's sick.
It also features the it's there. It's 2011.
2011. See, I wasn't that far off. I said 2010.
Yeah, it's got Danko Jones on it. It's got Wesley from the band Let's Wrestle.
Great band, by the way. That first LP is incredible by that band.
And that first single that was like a CD EP is fucking amazing.
I've tried again, footnote. I've tried to buy that Let's Wrestle LP off Jonah probably near of 10 times. Every single time I see him and he's like lukewarm on things, I'm like, hey, you want to sell that? Nope.
Yeah, no, he never will sell that.
I cannot prize it. Oh, no, I found it from his lovely can Italian expatriate British hands, however you want to say it.
No. Then there's Gacy and the Boys. And then it's got Sandy singing on it. And then it's got Ben singing on it. And then it goes, and it's got our homies, Dan Romano, singing on it.
Which one? Which song is that? I don't know. Oh, yeah. Okay, the Wavy Orange. Yeah.
And then
see, I knew of the that he was on the, whatever, the David's Plan or whatever the hell, the Christmas one or whatever.
Yeah.
The phone calls. I knew they were on that one.
Yeah.
Or he was.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was on a vocal track on this. Yeah. Neat.
Yeah, and then
very cool.
It also features Simone Schmidt from Fiverr, AC Newman, the mighty AC Newman.
New Pornographers, yeah.
Yeah. And then CK, and then Jonah on vocals on the weird fake German And then Dylan from Cloud Nothings, also on that record.
Nice. Another decent pick.
That's a very proud comp for me. You know, So considering that came out of me just talking shit in an interview with Pitchfork, that's like, you know, one of my creative crowning achievements, I think.
Now, this idea was cool. Even when it came out, I remember being really excited about it to hear it. And I think the Animal Man song, Do You Feed the Curry song, which also I believe Sandy did the video for.
Yes, or Sandy is in. Did. Yeah.
I think she did. Anyway, it's excellent as well. Great.
Dude, what about Porcelain on Porcelain with Danko Jones? And it's like a Hardaway song.
That's the song of the comp for me, but because it's sport themed. So, of course, I like, though, that in the style on the resource, it lists it as Britpop punk.
I know.
Nice.
I know. There you go. There you go. It's fake British. Not a single British person is on that record.
Well, there we go. So we've just broke down the Davidstown comp from 2011. There you go.
That was an ego trip for me.
It's great. It really is.
That was an affirmation.
Yeah. Woo. It looks great too, by the way. I don't know who did the layout for that, but they did a good job. Very cool.
No, it was, I think that's Sandy. I think Sandy is definitely the person that deserves all the credit in the world for
layout. Jonah and Sandy, it says. So yeah, props. There we go.
Yeah. I wanted to look slightly different, I remember saying, and then, but they did this, and I was like, nope, that looks fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And, Sandy is, of course, very instrumental to Fucked Up for so many reasons, but the stuff that she does that people don't see is perhaps some of the most important stuff, like the visual components of it, too, and just, like, things like that. It's just, like, a lot falls on Sandy's shoulders.
Nice. Well, she's done a great job. There you go.
There you go. So now we can move on to talking about news. Chris, is there any news we should be getting to right now?
Well, it depends where you want to go with this. We talked before about the sort of sensationalized news, but you did send an item. I don't know if that's what you want to get into now, about the record price thing or what have you. But
let's do that.
Okay, well, what did you send?
No, I don't want to get. I didn't want to talk about Kanye West necessarily. I think people have tried.
That's what I mean.
Just about enough. No, let's keep this. Yeah. Let's keep this to a realm of conversation that I think we can engage in a very constructive way.
I just didn't know if your secret punk theory is still in play. That's what I mean.
Well, it's going to get real sketchy if the secret punk stuff keeps going on. Like, I think the iconography is going to go real. Real right of center.
Yes, we'll hear what samples are on the new record. Then we'll deliberate.
Yeah, it's "Hail the New Dawn of America" might be a track title potentially.
Not touching that one, but yeah, go on.
All right, let's go on to some much more positive things to talk about.
Yeah,
which is actually a huge bummer thing for me to feel. To talk about, which is the incredible inflation of records, which has befallen kind of punk and hardcore in the last few years. And this is like, you know, something that's not new. I think the idea that this is a bubble and will one day burst has always been there. And I think everyone's kind of thought they were at peaks at different times. Like, I remember when Misfit singles were like hundreds of dollars on the walls of Rotate This, Jill Heath's Misfits collection, which was fucking ridiculous, and it was hundreds of dollars, and it was like, you know, completely unaffordable to me, as it would probably be today if it was just hundreds of dollars too, to be fair. But it's amazing to see that stuff was now probably thousands of dollars, several thousands of dollars in some cases with those records.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't seem to stop, and that apparently, Chris, does not just end with Misfits records.
No, yes, and you sent a, what is it? Oh, this was actually the link from,
it's on.
Oh, they do their, the resource does their, like, whatever, every couple months or a few months, their most expensive records. Gotcha.
Yeah, and the most expensive record on in the number six position is...
Not six, three.
Three, sorry, the three position, sorry.
Yeah.
I got the price confused.
Yeah.
Is the incredible, but... Don't know at this price, if I'll be buying it, Gorilla Biscuit 7-inch on cream yellow vinyl, which once again looks really cool, especially with the purple sleeve. But it is priced at how much, Chris?
Well, in U.S. dollars, it's listed here at $6,144, which to me is absolutely insane.
That is an amazing record. But, like, what would be the records that would be worth more than that at this point?
I'm thinking the ones I've seen, I've looked up these things before when the resources put them out, and I remember Minor Threat Records, I believe, were more expensive than that or very near.
I don't know. No, I don't think $6,000.
No, I think they were. It was like crazy versions of like,
oh, like some of the rare. Yeah, like maybe like that fat, sorry, fat, Rich from Radio Raheem and yeah. And from Parts Unknown Records has the most amazing cover version of that where it's an acetate sleeve.
Yeah,
I think was in a book, right?
Yeah, I've only ever heard the legend. I've never seen or you've mentioned to me. I don't know exactly what it is or where it's featured.
It's
but
a legit pocket sleeve made out of an acetate with the Minor Threat 7-inch, which we talked to Ian about on the fabled Chris, yeah. Damien, Ian Brodown.
Yeah. Yeah. Also alternatively known as Very Late in Philadelphia for the show.
Yeah, we're going to be fucking late. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, one of the greatest afternoons of our, well, certainly my life. I don't know about yours.
Oh,
but.
God, yeah. Oh, fucking, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, I can actually, if I wanted to, I have done a list of my favorite days. When I'm in the van on tour and you got nothing to do, you think of like a lot of things to just occupy your mind. And one day I remember just like thinking in my head, like, what are my favorite days that I can remember? And I got a pretty strong top 10 list.
Oh, for sure.
You know, my kids being born.
Yeah, you know, I would hope. Yeah.
This day in England that I saw John Cleese walk down the street. And I got a free pair of shoes. And I found the Crisis LP for super cheap.
Nice.
In a record store, and then we played a really fun show, and I was like, and I had pretty good weed, which is not always the case in England. I'm like, damn, it was a good day.
Yeah, you were ticking off the boxes that day. Yeah,
ticking off the boxes, Chris.
Nice.
But that day with Ian, that tops that day, and there was no weed.
Very true. There wasn't. I can attest to that. That's correct.
Yeah, there's no weed on that entire tour.
We were, to be fair, we've talked about this and dare I say humble bragged about this before on the show many times, of course.
It's part of the canon, Chris.
It is part of the canon, and we are fully in the right to do so because it was remarkable. But I just want to also shout out that DC was extremely welcoming to us as a whole.
Yeah.
So the whole, like, kind of 48 hours that we were there, it really did bizarrely feel in a certain way like the red carpet was rolled out for us in a, you know, mysterious way. Not that we were some VIPs, it was just people were super nice and very, very hospitable and very, very like we hung out with, well, you were the one who was able to occupy the conversation more than me, but yeah, we a lot of people were very, very nice to us and very, very, you know, whatever.
The homie welcoming. Jason, one of the best always, guests ever on the history of the show,
yep.
Hooked it up. You know, we got to do a lot of fun stuff. We ate well. We slept well.
Totally.
You know, got to meet legends. Like, legends, you know? Like, yeah. That's why we should do, when both you and I can eventually figure it out, get back in the van.
Yeah,
go around and do another one of these tours because, you know, it might not have been the highest paying gig of either of our lives.
No, yeah.
By any stretch, but at the same time, it was one of the most fun.
No, it was. It was great. It was, speaking of, too, relating to what we sort of stumbled upon this aside from, which is the escalating value of records and sort of that crazy inflation existing. I remember having, or more specifically you, but we were discussing the well at, I believe it was the Black Cat, right? It was the venue, if I'm not mistaken. And you and Dante or whatever, Dante was talking about DJing at the Black Cat. And because I guess they DJ every whatever. I don't know what how often the nights are. But and he said he still DJs his original records, which mm-hmm. in the conversation was insane because we were all discussing how like he was saying he was playing like basically all the original Discord records. If he ever spun them, he's playing original records, which he was just getting like not flack, but he was like he was blowing people's minds when they would like friends would come up and be like, whoa, like and he's, you know, he his consideration for it is just that, you know, they're his records and he plays them. It's not
yeah.
a pretension, which, you know, again, it's hard to do in like 2018 when you see something like that auction. But
oh, yeah. But I DJ with my records, too.
I do, too. But I'm
my own needles. But.
Yeah, I'm very careful. But like I don't really bring records when I DJ ever if I'm ever to be that person, which I've not been. But it's still just kind of remarkable. It's too bad that that's the state of things, though.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean?
That yeah. brings us to our first email, Chris.
Yeah, yeah. So what the emails we have here. So
the first email, let's do the one. The one of the great emails we've ever received.
Okay. Well, there's two and they piggyback. So I'm going to do two, but I know what you're talking about. The second, like the okay. one you're referring to, we'll do second.
Okay.
Because I just thought it touches on. Anyway, so listener Deanie, a local I believe it's the Deanie that I know we know from the Toronto area. Great guy. He writes in and he sent a link to last episode. We were discussing Poison Idea, record collectors are pretentious assholes, the record, and the cover of it. We went very in-depth on, which if you're a punk, you're probably very familiar. And we were just saying we wish that there was, or I, you know, collectively we were saying we wish someone had itemized what's actually on the cover, because it's, you know, we were pulling things out we didn't realize were on there as we were talking about it, you know, scanning the photos on the resource. So he sent a link, which is on rateyourmusic.com, which we will get perhaps Tristan to post on the Facebook or what have you. But some beautiful human being out there has actually done the work of itemizing all of the records that are on there, apparently. Again, to vet this, I haven't, you know, gone through with a fine-tooth comb to make sure they're all there, but it's pretty thorough, and the ones that I'm seeing, yeah, are in fact on there. So I don't know how you want to deal with this at first. Do you want to try and go through this really quick, or do you want to go on to the next email and then piggyback on everything, Dane?
Why don't we go why don't we go through that one for quick?
Okay, so it's weird, too, because I'm just noticing now he sent this link, but the other email that we're referring to, there's another link of someone who's also done. So there's two
links out there.
Two people have done it, yeah.
I'm sure there's also probably been a few others over yeah. the years, too.
So either way, I'm sure, yeah, exactly. I'm sure we're missing some. But so I sent you the link to the one, Dame. So I don't know if you want to touch on this with me or how you want to go. Like,
I'm going to click on the one, and why don't you click on the other one and see if we all match up.
Well, it's definitely different. Oh. I got – oh, maybe not.
How many records are on yours?
Trying to see the total amount, but it looks to be the same because the running order on the first. No, it's not the same. Well, the records are here. Yeah, it's slightly different. I'm sure they're all here, just in a different order. So we'll just
there's
do the
62
one.
on the one I'm looking at on the Cogs.
Okay. Yeah, so one's on Discogs, one's on Rate Your Music. What we're going to do then right now is we're going to use the resources one and just collectively do it, Dame, because I think that's easier than jumping back and forth.
Okay.
So you want to begin here with the list, or how you want to do
it? Why don't we go through it on the second email?
Yeah, so we're going to hop over. Basically, as we're itemizing it, what we've learned is that another listener, which I just have to find the email here, Scott Holston, this is this lovely human being's name, and yes. He wrote on the back of the last one we received, like I mentioned, and mentions here he's really curious of the value and that he made a spreadsheet with median and high prices from the resource, and he had to look elsewhere for some of the other records that weren't being shown or what have you, and he seems to have collected a very, very thorough, sent us a separate spreadsheet of all of his hard work, and it is truly incredible.
It's incredible.
He has done it all. This is we often, like, you know, whatever, shout out the people who write in or listen for, you know, the things they've sent to us and what have you. I mean, this is definitely one of the top ones we've ever got. So where do you want to begin with this one? Because we can tell them the
overall.
We should
go through the records one by one now.
Okay, so 63.
Yeah.
So we've done the adverts, Agent Orange, Upstart.
No, let's do these again. Let's go through. Okay. Number one is the adverts, One
yeah.
Chord Wonder,
yeah.
Quick Step, and it's medium prices, $37.42.
Just under 40, yeah.
But the high price is $61.29. Now, I think, like, you know, normally I would say, you know, you go with the medium price, but now things tend to be on the high price side of things.
Yeah, it's, again, yeah, as we were discussing, I mean, it's a different, it's difficult to buy hitter records these days, I find, because you're never getting a deal, from my experience anyway.
Yeah. But. And then there's Agent Orange, of course, with Your Mother Sucks Cocks in Hell, which is $547.96, the medium, and $1,000.
Yep.
Is the high. Murder of Little Towers by Angelic Upstarts. You know what? Fuck, man. I should have tried to get this record when it was cheap. Because now it's $1,000.33.
Yeah.
Fuck. Antidote, Thou Should Not Kill. It's 16
classic.
On the high end.
Yeah.
It's
just over a grand.
Yeah.
In the low.
Yeah. Anti Nowhere League, Streets of London. You could get for the, which is even fucking crazy. This is now a $33 record.
Yep.
It's amazing because, like, it's not that long ago in the grand scheme of things, but I guess it is. But I remember going to England for the first time, and that's, like, honestly a pound record. You'd find those in, like, kind of, like, it was still hard to find, especially one in good condition, but you could find it for a pound.
Yep.
Avengers, We Are the One, which is $539.85. BGK, White Male Dominance, which is pretty cheap.
$80 median, $150 high end. Yeah,
this is the one I'm kicking myself over because I had a chance to buy this for $200 a couple, like 2 years ago. Bad Religion, self titled, $500, $1,000 on the high end.
Yeah,
Bag Survive, which is $218.37 on the high end. That would probably
I like
be
that
for
you're doing the cents. Go on.
Well, you know, I like how people do with that, but that's probably just because of the conversion.
Yeah.
But that record, I imagine that would be, or I wonder if this is ever sold. There's like two versions, right? There's that version that has the labels on the wrong side, and then it's taped over with the correct song titles.
You got me on this one. I don't know the specifics of that record.
Battalion of Saints, Fighting Boys is $220, and then Second Coming is $60.66, according to someone.
Yeah.
You know, Big Boys and the Dicks, $210 in the high end. Nervous Breakdown, $1,000. It's amazing how many records have broken that $1,000 barrier.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I remember when I went to buy that the Negative Approach Test Press years ago. It was like over $1,000. I traded records for it, so it's all good. But it was like amazing at that point how few records were above that to me. Like I was like looking around, like being like, well, I could buy this record for all this money because I had traded all these records for a bunch of money, and instead of saving it and putting my kids' college fund and responsible things, I decided to invest in hardcore. Hardcore Lives, and, Unity, and records. But I was like, you know, I could have bought, there were very few records that had broken that, you know, kind of price at that point. Like, I think, you know, obviously Chunking, but that's always been kind of a fucking crazy sort of high watermark for record prices. But, you know, Fixed Vengeance, Necro Sex Drive. But now it's like, man, how many we're only at B, Chris, and we've already come across $5,000, over $5,000 in records. Just over the $1,000 record mark.
Yeah.
Records, I mean.
Yep.
There's also like Charles Manson, a couple copies of that, of course, which is $400.
Yeah, I like the, by the way, how thorough that is, because there are two copies on the cover, and he's itemized two copies. Very astute. Nicely done.
The very classily named The Child Molesters. Wir Lieben Die. I don't even know. I'm terrible with my German. $300.
Yeah.
Cockney Rejects, $26. Like, you know, there's
still a cheap record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe Hot Wire My Heart's only a $230 record. Like, given how these other ones have inflated, that's been like that price since it came out. Like, I would say that's one of those records that hasn't appreciated.
Yeah, I think there are a few.
Not since it came out, but since I was a kid.
But it's also, I don't know how many of each of these records there are, right? So that could be the factor.
Yeah. There's also The Damned, you know, which the Black Album, which I cannot believe is a $42 record now, even though it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
So that's pretty expensive. Sonic Reducer, $150.
Insane.
The cheapest record is the next one, The Banana Splits by the Dickies. But even Dawn of the Dickies is like $25 on the high end, $14 on the median.
Yep.
Ernest Edgelum Rebels, Doomsday Troops, $146.72, and then $218.37. Farts, Because the World Stinks, $60.
Yeah, not bad.
Not bad. Not bad. But here's where it gets nutty.
Yeah.
At one point, you could have bought this for, you know, $926 on the median price.
Yep.
Which means a lot of must have changed hands, because I can't imagine there were that, you know, like that must have been one of the lower prices that thing's ever been for sale on Discogs. I don't remember that ever being below $1,000 since Discogs has been around.
Yeah, no, exactly.
But on the high end, $4,250.
The most expensive record on the list.
Yeah. Lexicon Devil, under $1,000, but getting close, $860.66. And then, GRB,
yep.
69.76 on the median, 112. I don't know. There's a couple, like we could go through all these, but it would take a long time. But Misfits Cough Cool, $3,000.
Yep. It's the next big one.
Yep. Bullet, $1,500.
All the Misfits are above five. Yeah. All of them are at least above five, and then, well, median are, but you're not going to get it for that these days.
No, no. And the one that I actually really surprised me how cheap it is, Quicken the Dead single.
Yeah, that I'm noticing now, I just realized this, that Necro's IQ 32 is that expensive now? It's almost $480
yeah.
in the high end?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'm not that shocked at that. Really?
I'm just like, I have that. I just don't know why I didn't buy that for near that. And I certainly didn't buy it for $5, but not that.
Yeah, I didn't buy, well, like No Policy by SOA for $900 on my end.
No, yeah, yeah.
And the median is $525.
Yeah.
There's also United Mutation, $242.62. I'm glad that's appreciated. That record fucking is amazing.
Yeah, agreed.
Teen Idols, $1,000, broke the $1,000 mark.
Yep.
No Minor Threat records on that, eh?
Yeah, but that feeds into the.
Yeah,
but Teen Idols are on there. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, Teen Idols are on there, and SOA's on there.
Yeah, true.
But I guess Minor Threat was the band they fucking hated.
I guess.
YesLA.
Point being. Oh, okay. You're gonna do it. Yeah, do another one. Yeah.
I'm YesLA's not that expensive. Tooth and Nail comps, not that expensive. Oy, the album. Comps are never that expensive, to be honest with you.
Seems like they're definitely low end, yeah.
But let's get to the nitty gritty, the why we're all here. What would it cost for you to buy this album worth of records, Chris?
Well, what do you want? You want both or you want the overall high?
Let's do the median one first, buddy.
Median is $15,000, $383.86.
And on That's the high medium. End.
The high end is $28,190.91.
So
there you go.
A down payment on a house.
Oh yeah, easy.
You know, like a nice house.
And that's just the cover of that record. That's not all the records you would want. That's not even
all the records on the cover. That's all the cover records that are visible on the cover.
Oh true. There's fair enough.
More,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, and that's also like early on, like they were talking about having a State Children flexi, you know, like he was talking about having all this other crazy shit later on in their lives. It's like, wow. there's some good deal of value in that pile of records.
Yep. So there you have it.
Wow. You could, but it's funny. 'Cause like you're constantly wondering like, well, is this it? Like you can't go more than this, but then shit happens when it goes higher.
I used to think that way, and now I'm never amazed anymore. The only thing that's kind of a bummer is I've resigned myself to the fact that there's some records I just will not own.
Oh God, yeah.
So, and that's the only bummer.
I'll never own a fucking Vix Vengeance.
Yeah, well, that one was always one I never thought I'd own, but there was other ones on the periphery that I used to think, okay, well, maybe, but. It's just getting increasingly more and more and more like that it's just not going to happen. At the same time, too, in my head, I'm like, it's just there's an aspect of it that's just stupidity at that point. You know what I mean? If I'm going to throw away that much money, it's like, yeah, it's very, very frustrating. But at the same time, I suppose if I'm looking at it from the perspective of certainly people like you and I, you know, these are historical artifacts that are fairly rare. So I do get it, but it is extremely depressing looking at that list.
Speaking of which, we didn't do digs this week, and I got some good digs.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you did. That's right. Let's touch into that. Let's do that right now.
Okay.
Speaking of pretentious record collecting assholes like you and I.
Let me just grab this. Come on. All right, got it. I, this week, have scratched a major want off my want list, and speaking of artifacts, a turned out of punk artifact, if there ever was one, in my mind. And that is, I finally tracked down a copy of the Patty Duke Syndrome Split. featuring the, now world famous Ryan Adams on vocals and guitar for his first band that he played those instruments in, but also featured Brian fucking Walsby.
True.
From Wax fame, from, you know, all this awesome stuff. So Brian is on this and Ryan is on this, and
yeah,
it's a cool ass record.
It does look very cool too. To elaborate here, it's the Patty Duke Syndrome Split with Glamour Puss.
Yes.
And it's from 94, Blast O Platter Records released it. And it's on the resource. It's got a little bit of a value too. Nice.
Oh yeah. It's a hard one to get because of this, Ryan Adams thing, which is cool. You know, don't get me wrong. I think it's cool that this has got this Ryan Adams connection. I like some Ryan Adams. I like Whiskey Town, but to me, the coolest thing about this record is the fact that this is yet another link in the Brian Walsby being one of the most important drummers in punk history, or and also ultimately, I guess, like alternative music history, indie music history, like rock music history. Like, you know, he turned down Nirvana.
True.
Check out that episode, everyone that has it.
Yeah, it's one a great of the one. Greats.
It truly is. This was also the label that put out the first Ryan Adams band, which is the band Blank Label. But I think he just played bass in that band.
Oh, nice. You don't have that, do you, by chance?
Yeah.
Oh, you do? Nice.
Yeah, I got it at the homie, Bobby, from Vinyl Conflicts record store. Oh.
Yes.
And so he had that when I was there. He wasn't there, but I got that when I went to his store.
Yep. Shout out.
Definitely. And then I got these records today at BMV, my friend Matt, and who put me up one time when I was breaking up with, someone, and I, you know, didn't want to hang out at the same place that they were living at for the next little while, put me up. So Matt and Dan ran this place and hooked me up with great records. So, you know, they saved my ass twice now, Chris.
Nice.
I also got the Spaceship 7-inch there.
Which... That is very, I'm very, whatever, very jealous of that one, too.
Yeah, the second one, I was very stoked to find those two records. Believe me, it was a happy day. Worth making my son late for school for. Lauren doesn't think think so, but.
Amazing. Oh, amazing. All right. So what else? Is that it for your scores?
I think that's it, right? Like, that's all my scores, unless you got. I'm looking around my room to see if there's other ones.
I didn't. You know what's funny, though? I did. Well, I haven't scored anything in a couple weeks, but one thing I did. There was two things I wanted to shout out. One was it's kind of an obvious one for people that follow sort of new hardcore punk, but the new Hank Wood and the Hammerheads LP, or 12 inch, however you want to consider it, because it's not, I guess, LP length, but it is physically on a 12 inch. Is fantastic, released by Toxic State. It is self-titled, and I highly recommend it. That was one of the newer new records I bought. What else? I'm just peeking through some stuff here. Nothing too crazy. I got the Cynics Rock and Roll LP, which is
sick.
Pretty
cool. That's a good record.
Yeah.
Shout out to Dave Martin.
Shout out to D Martin. And yeah, that's about it. Nothing crazy for me. I haven't done much in a few weeks, but. Anyway, yeah, I meant to do that, I think, last week when we did an episode, because I was so vibing on that record, listening to it a lot. But since we're on that topic now, might as well have shouted it out. So there we go.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I went to another new record store that's like, you know, I guess, unfortunately for my family, 5 minutes from my house.
Okay.
Called Invisible City Records.
Oh, it's cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you've been there, right?
Yeah, I have. Great. I have somehow was not able, like I didn't get anything when I went through, but I had to restrain. They had plenty. I just was doing a quick browse. The day, yeah, when I was, yeah, I remember that was the day you went to New York. I first went in there.
Oh, really? Yeah. I got the Tyro 7-inch there.
Nice.
Which is a record that came out on SWP Records, Silent W Productions, which is a label that put out the Dundas 7-inch, like a Canadian kind of punk record where the guy sounds just like Neil Young on vocals. It's pretty sick.
Okay.
And then also got the Andrew Klimek 7-inch, which is the guy from X Blank X, his solo 7-inch from 79.
Nice. Yeah, they have, I mean, you know, by no means are we partial to more stores than others, but no. It is a very new store in the area of which Damien lives, but it's interesting, the stuff they're doing. More specifically, they release their own, whatever you want to say, reissues or what have you. What is it called? I'll just look it up right now in the resource. I think it's Invisible City Editions, I believe, is their label itself, which does reissue stuff.
Okay.
And it's a lot of, like, for the most part, like, you know, kind of strange psych and dance and like, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did a. They've done a few records this year, all of which I find very interesting. But it's nothing particularly punk, in my opinion. But very, very interesting for people like kind of left field, sort of dance, sort of new wave centric stuff. So there you go.
Yeah, it's funny. There's, you know, like no shortage of great record stores right now too.
No. Yeah.
You know, I recently got. Like a sick Joseph K single that I've been looking for at I forget where I was. I don't know, maybe Sonic Boom. It was like the one version of it I didn't have, and it was there. And I was so stoked to find it.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But no, I guess we're done talking about records now.
Well, the one, I guess, we're relating to like the Poison Idea thing, I guess we should shout out too. I just thought about why not shout out while we do the new. There's a new record by a group called Fetish, which is a self-titled EP.
Mm.
7-inch, I believe. Well, it says EP. I'm assuming it's a 7-inch. I don't have it yet. Been meaning to find it. But it features Slayer Hippie on drums.
Awesome.
And it's released by Beach Impediment Records, which is a fantastic label. Shout out to Mr. Schubert for doing an excellent job. And he also released recently a group called Witch Trial, a 12-inch of a demo. It's sort of like great crossover stuff. Very cool as well. And can't go wrong. Check out that stuff.
Awesome. And a rad dude.
Yep. Totally rad.
Friend of Robbie Brookside's.
True, yes. Good point. Yeah.
But yeah, let's move on to the next email, I guess,
Chris. Yeah, yeah. So email wise, we have, let me just go through, since we So a quick one here from our listener, Brian, just sent in a screen capture. Speaking of which, either last week or the week before, the movie Airheads was mentioned by you and I because someone was talking about, I don't know if they mentioned the NoFX thing or whatever they mentioned, but it's a screen cap of NoFX in the movie. Like, it seems to be, I'm thinking it's a record, if not maybe a CD, but
it's a CD.
It's White Trash, Two Heaves and a Bean, and it's Buscemi. It's a screenshot of Buscemi, like in the, you know, in the console of the radio station with that just kind of like prominently featured.
Yeah. And I think it's when he says, why don't you play more stuff like this? Why don't you ever play these guys on the radio?
Okay. Which is kind of funny because then there's, of course, their song from that album.
Yeah. And I think are they playing them on the radio at that point too? So they've taken over, I think. Are they on that soundtrack?
Maybe. I don't know.
The Airhead soundtrack. I don't think we've ever done this.
We haven't flogged that enough. I like this, though. Dude, I genuinely like this movie.
There's a Chromex sticker in it. There's, like, you know, someone else.
That's why someone brought it up. There is no NoFX song on the soundtrack.
No,
there
the soundtrack's is not that as cool as you'd expect.
No. But Degeneration is, as is Prong and Ramones, Anthrax. I am sure, this is horrible era Anthrax, so ignore that. But anyway, yeah. And the Lone Rangers, which is the fake band that is in Airheads, the Degenerated song, is also on here, which is the cover.
Awesome.
Yeah. And 90s classics like Candlebox as well. So needless to say, this soundtrack is not essential.
Yeah, no, not essential. But it does have the Motorhead featuring Ice-T and the lead singer of Ugly Kid Joe doing a song, Born to Raise Hell.
Yeah, and if that doesn't sound amazing, I don't know what does.
Yeah, exactly.
It's also almost clocks in at 5 minutes in length, so I'm sure it's going to be incredible.
Yeah, it's going to be the
raging the entire time. Yeah,
yeah. And it also has a song by Dig, Curious George Blues.
Yeah, it's quite the. Anyway, NoFX is not on the soundtrack.
No, NoFX did not make the soundtrack. Movie's got way cooler music preferences than maybe the soundtrack does, though. Yeah. It does have, you know, a member of Reagan Youth, or sorry, a song of Reagan Youth. And a member of Heart Attack.
Yes, exactly. There is another thing that you committed here to the email pile, which I'm not sure if you wanted to discuss, which you said it's a photo from the gram.
Yes.
And from Portia de Rossi. Is that who it's from?
Portia de Rossi, yeah.
And who is, I believe, some kind of celebrity, right?
She was on.
Oh, that's right, Arrested Development. Pardon me, I didn't pick her out by her name. I just caught it. Yeah,
you know, she's on something that's fucking incredible.
Yeah, but
Ally McBeal.
Sure. So what did you want to discuss about this other than the obvious? So if you want to describe
it, it's a piece of art made by what's the name of the artist?
Christopher Wool.
Christopher Wool.
The name. Yeah.
And it says Fear. And does it say who sent this by the chance?
I got it from you. You sent it internally. I don't see anything else. No, on it.
I can't remember. Someone sent this in to me. Please, if you send this in to me, please send me a message so I can get proper credit for sending this in to the show. Or maybe someone tagged me on Instagram. I think that's maybe that where I got it from.
I don't know. Could be.
Anyway, but it is of a piece of artwork that says Fear in the style that is 100% the Fear stencil logo.
Yes, as seen on the Fear the record, of course, as well as any other Fear logo, I guess. But interesting,
because it could be just Fear done with a stencil.
Yeah,
you know, it's like that. That is a possibility, but it also could be a complete rip of the Fear logo, which is what it kind of looks like.
Yeah,
but maybe it's a tribute to the Fear logo. I mean, it's a punk artist.
Yeah, it could be. It looks like an homage to me, but again, in this day and age, I just assume those kind of lifts or like, you know, little nods are probably what it came from. But I'm curious how aware she as to what the reference is, because she writes Fear in the caps too, which makes me think she knows what Fear the band is, but I don't know.
It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, she was dating, or I believe even married to, Ellen DeGeneres for a while.
Gotcha.
And Ellen DeGeneres' brother played in classic New Orleans punk power pop band, The Cold.
Ah, so perhaps there is a little bit of connections there.
Maybe Ellen's got those records. You know, I've always wondered, like, was Ellen a punk? You know, if I'm ever on that show, or if anyone I know ever gets on that show, you better believe they're going to be asking her about her bro.
Nice. Do we want to move on to the next email?
Yeah, let's move on to the next email.
Unless you
want me to talk about Ellen a little bit more, because I'm totally prepared to do that too.
We just have a clarification from Kel, our Norwegian correspondent, regarding Flying Crap, who we discussed. I don't know. It came up from that Turbo Fatal Erection split record.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what. Anyway, we were saying it was kind of a one-sided record, but he was just writing about Flying Crap. And he says they're from, and again, Kristiansand, South Norway. They have one CD and one 7-inch. And not counting the split on Fatal Erection. Anyway, he says that's their best release. They had quite the reputation for firing off live ammunition at several shows.
He's wrong man for us to kind of dismiss. Definitely not a one-sided 7-inch. It's a two-sided affair because both bands are classic.
Yep. So anyway, that was just a little tidbit I thought was interesting based on what we discussed. There's another message here. Thanks, Kel, again, by the way. Always sending great stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you.
There's another sort of combating your the most physical activity, adjacent punk, whatever your classification is.
Bring it on.
For it's, wrestling.
Bring it's, it on and watch you fall.
They have a person by the name of – oh, sorry. We had you had discussed – anyway, a baseball player of some kind that is a straight-edge baseball player.
Yeah.
And they say that this person is likely C.J. Wilson.
That was it, C.J. Wilson.
And they say that it says Austin is the person who sent it. But anyway, says they're friends with CM Punk and on social media is seen in photos and what have you with that. So there's another – there you go. Challenging – well, not challenging, but – showing that there are other
I brought him up before and I'll give you him. I'll give you Scott Radinsky, but like legitimately I can name like maybe a half a dozen punk bands that are fronted by pro wrestlers.
Yes. There's another email related to that as well from Eric L. writes in, and this is a I just want to see what they are. 2-time cyclocross U.S. national champion Stephen Hyde is also shouted out here, as he has he sent in screen caps, Eric has, of this person listening to Void.
Okay.
As well as a sort of pile of records. I can't see all of them, but you can definitely make out of Step and also Misfits Walk Among Us, prominently featured beside a turntable. I'd be lying if it didn't say it looked a bit like this person's agent or promo person had like strategically set these records up for them to be a guest on your show, but I'm not sure. Regardless, so there's another shout out to an athlete who likes decent music.
Okay, we'll reach out to that guy. But yeah. Chris, do you have your phone handy?
Yes.
Can you go to Instagram?
If I had it, yes, I could, but let's see what we can do.
Hypothetically.
Yeah.
Can you type in the punk wrestling connection?
Okay. Yes, the familiar punk wrestling connection Instagram. Yes, okay.
Can you click on that second photo?
There's one that has like Wasted Dream in it. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just read off the records that Daisuke Sasaki posted a picture of his Instagram. There's the Death Side Chaos UK split.
Yeah, Wasted Dream.
Wasted Dream.
And what is the other one?
I can't really make it out.
I can't either.
But anyway, he's got he's got like a fucking killer collection of just some Death Side Rippers that he just puts up there. You know, he just throws that up there. So, you know, once again, that's just one wrestler. That's just one.
Okay.
We could go MVP today on Instagram, posted a picture of himself in a plane holding up a copy of My Riot, Roger Moret, former guest's new book.
Yes, you which know. I've yet to read still. I need to get that. I
still got
to
get a fucking copy as well. There's like a bunch of books that have come out that I really want to read.
Yeah.
But anyway, right there, another wrestler.
Okay. So today,
our friend, another former guest, Matt Cross, Mad Dog 2020, posted a picture of himself in a Judge sweatshirt. I could go on, Chris. I could go on forever like this, man.
All right. I'm very familiar with your well, I'm not familiar with them as wrestlers, but I'm familiar with you shouting them out as punk fanatics on the show. Where are we going from here? We have a couple more emails. One was, oh no, you already sent that one to me. So there's one final one here to get into, which relates to your television, pardon me, your t-shirt that you mentioned last week, which was the Feel the Darkness Poison idea.
Did I call Matt Cross Mad Dog?
I think you did.
M-Dog 2020, sorry.
Okay. But it's from Nicholas, and he said he laughed about your story about wearing the Feel the Darkness shirt, and his wife himself. Oh, sorry. Listening to Damien's story about wearing his Feel the Darkness shirt and his wife's comments about how sketchy the shirt looks to people who don't know Poison Idea. This past Christmas, his wife, meaning Nicholas's, asked him for some gift ideas, wrote a list of records I've been sleeping on, picking up, also put a Feel the Darkness t-shirt on the list. I live in a small rural Wisconsin town of about 4,000 people, and my wife is a school teacher, which he puts in brackets, is important later. My wife is not a deep head and wasn't familiar with the cover art for the record. After searching around online, she came to me and basically forbade me, jokingly, from wearing Feel the Darkness shirt. Is that grounds for divorce, he writes. Of course not. She was half joking, but did express concern about her students, who I routinely see around town and are about 12 years old, not understanding the context of the shirt. I'm paraphrasing here, but she said something to the effect of pentagrams and upside down crosses, fine, but the gun to the head is a bit over the top. It's pretty funny, and I agree, it may be a bit over the top for the kids. I guess I will wait until she retires. Damien, your thoughts?
Yeah, I recently wore that shirt on a drive with my family to a family member's house in Montreal. And so every rest stop we stopped at, I had to make sure to zip up my jacket and just eat with my jacket zipped up. And then today I put it on and accidentally forgot that I was going to be doing the drop off with my youngest son and wore the shirt to drop him off at school.
What I would say as well is if any of these 12-year-old students are cool, you'll know because they'll be psyched on the shirt.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but you're going to know who the real ones are.
Yeah. I don't know, and it probably speaks to my sensibility, but I understand how it's like a striking and kind of like obviously whatever provoking image, but I'm more like if I were to be offended by anything on that, it would be the fact that it's Tiny Tim. And Tiny Tim was sick. Like other than that, I don't really, you know, for me it's like in today's, you know, day, I think most kind of media and like action movie kind of scenarios, I think like a gun to a face or a head on a shirt seems pretty innocuous, but that's just me.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where we've become conditioned to think it's normal. But if you're not like a fan of punk, some of the shit that you see on punk covers would be.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I agree with that for sure. There's no, my sensibilities are not for the norm. That's for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Same here. Thank God.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, should we move on?
Yeah, we're good. Email is done. Mailbag.
Email's done.
Absolutely incredible this week. We have other ones that have been sent through, which we will probably be touching on in future episodes. So there's some stuff we've backshelved. But thank you, especially to the list and the value of the records. Incredible.
That was incredible. That was definitely one of my one of those emails where you get and you're like, man, that's why we do this thing. So we can have fun talks like that.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
You know, and realize that maybe there is gold in these hills. I mean, we should sell these records now and buy houses.
Well, you could. I don't have most of these.
I don't have most of those either, to be fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I get enough money for a down payment on a small condo.
Perhaps, yes.
I think we should move on to today's episode, which is the homie Jasmine White Gulls from the band No Joy and Bad Flirt. And, yeah, just someone that I've been friends with for quite some time. And someone that is a rare guest for us, unfortunately, because we should have more people from here, from, well, Montreal, because we don't get a chance to talk about that scene enough. And it's a lot of interesting things that kind of came out of there. And it's like a lot of different stuff going on there. And it's, yeah, like kind of like arguably at different times, the punk capital of Canada, as far as, you know, bands' popularity, shows, bands playing from there, even. And of course, I'm talking about Simple Plan when I talk about the Kings.
Oh boy, yeah, I don't know about that.
But have you heard? Are you a No Joy fan at all, Chris? Have you heard listening before?
Well, for one, I listened to the interview, but no, I'm not familiar with this band. Weirdly enough, but everything being discussed in the interview seemed up my alley, so yeah. I definitely need to check them out. I just haven't had time over the last few days since I've listened to that interview. I meant to try and check something out before this episode tonight. I couldn't, but yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff on with regards to this, because even I didn't know that this group was sort of, you know, quote unquote as big as they are, and the label that releases their stuff, or at least released whatever No Joy stuff up till 2015. As a label, I'm kind of interested in. So it's just, yeah, it's somehow not been on my radar, but very much in my wheelhouse, if that makes sense.
Well, and also, how about the fact that this is the second sibling band, or the first siblings that we've ever had on the show, or have had on the show, because we've had Jasmine's sister on before.
Yeah.
But also, a family tie for me. My cousin Garland was the drummer in No Joy too.
Yeah, that is funny. Like, well, one, I didn't piece that. Well, that piece, sorry, that you just mentioned, I did. You know, you cue up in the intro or whatever, but I didn't realize the previous guest was the sister. I didn't know until the end when you sort of spilled that one. So I was like, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of just bizarre that there's. I mean, I'm sure it's not been the only time ever, but it is kind of unique that there's two siblings that are in very distinct different bands as vocalists that are, you know, and like kind of,
I can't think of too many siblings that are that, both working professional singers that vocals are that far apart.
Well, yeah. And just like, even just vocals are far apart, but like the, even stylistically, the music, like,
yeah.
And being the, cause what was it? The previous guest is, she's the singer of Arch Enemy, right? I believe.
Yeah. Alyssa.
Yeah. So she, I mean, that's a metal band, of course, and this No Joy band is not. But just that two different worlds, let alone, because Arch Enemy, the band themselves, is like from where? Like Scandinavia, I think, originally?
Yeah.
And she joined later or something. But so even just that, I don't know. Like, I think that's pretty bizarre, remarkable, you know, whatever circumstance that I don't know, the family produced two, like, you know, very talented front people.
And also, it's like not a thing where, like, you know, one sibling does really well and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to bring my other sibling along. Like, they both made their own way completely independently and to a level where they're both highly respected in their respective fields.
Yes, that's, you've said it a lot better than I was trying to say, but yes, exactly.
Yeah, well, I know, but like, I, and I'm sure there are, and I'm sure someone could write in and tell us, but I challenge that. I'm putting that down out as a, you know, laying down that as a gauntlet right now. Can you find like a sibling band where two siblings have kind of made it in such diverse sounds?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think.
Damnation AD and Battery is not that different. Both are amazing. Don't get me wrong. I love them both, but not as different. has no.
Well, even what is didn't what was the Breeders? What was the two different Breeders bands besides Amps, obviously
and the Pixies and
well the Pixies obviously, but the I thought there was another one. I'm forgetting the name. Oh, anyway,
because yeah, you know, she did the Amps, and then Kelly Deal just did Kelly Deal, or Kim Deal just did Kim Deal. Sorry,
so yeah. Right? But even still, like, that's fairly sonically in the same wheelhouse.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's not. Yeah, we're gonna have to search for like a Wild, I think, to find.
Yeah.
That kind of diversity in family, as far as sounds.
Regardless, though, no, I don't. Unfortunately, I don't know this band. I'm very curious to hear No Joy specifically. I love the. Just sidebar on a shallow note, I love the names of these groups. I think Bad Flirt's a great name, and so is No Joy. So
I was wondering if you had played with Bad Flirt when you guys were out on the road during that time period at like a Canadian music thing or something.
Yeah, it was really weird listening. Well, not weird. It was cool, but it was bringing back a lot of things when she was mentioning Montreal venues and stuff, but never, at least that I can remember. And I have a pretty decent memory for that kind of thing, and I don't I can't think of a time that we'd ever cross paths with Bad Flirt, certainly, and No Joy I would know, but if we had, but no, the short answer is no.
And it's like, I think that's that transition from Bad Flirt to No Joy, because Bad Flirt were great, you know, like I remember seeing them and being like, this band's really got to, like they write songs that were cool. You know, and they had a cool, like, they sounded great and all this stuff, but it just wasn't cool, maybe, in the same way that No Joy was.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how, like, obviously the songs are different in No Joy, too, and a little more kind of, like, fully formed, but it's also, like, the vibe is just, was just so much more there and is so much more there than it was in Bad Flirt. And it's amazing how far vibe and stuff can also help take something.
Well, even, you know, it just seems like, and even in her, whatever, part of the interview where she's talking about her journey, like, it Bad Flirt seems like, you know, kind of like, you know, dare I say, like, the first band kind of thing. And a lot of people's, you know, it's a stepping stone or whatever. Not to give any shade to Bad Flirt. I don't know these groups, but...
But that's the thing I'm saying. Like, they weren't, like, musically that, you know? Like, they were musically a lot better, like, really fucking good. I remember that was the thing... about that band is like all of us in fucked up, you know, it's rare that we all agree on something, but we all definitely agree when there's a good band playing, it seems like we're all just kind of like, oh, this stands out. Like this is fucking awesome. Especially a band you didn't know. And I remember us all being like, this band is good. Like we all like, you know, we're like, this band's really good. And they were trying like too hard. She kind of says it like they were almost like just like try hardy kind of band a little bit, you know, but they were fucking good. Like the songs were there, but they would like, you know, be on Canadian music industry stuff, or they'd be like, you know, like trying to just like, you know, make a break for themselves, which I guess like, you know, is admirable, but it's funny. Cause she kind of says, it's like, when you stop trying, that's when success comes.
Yeah. I think what I mean is like, if you're looking on the resource and you look up Bad Flirt, you know, you can see like there's a promo photo, and the promo photo, what you just described seems like a group that's doing that, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like, it's not a first band in the sense of like it's poorly, you know, executed. It just seems like it's not been through the ropes enough to kind of, I don't know, be like what you're saying, not try hard, however you want to word that, whatever, not overzealous or, but whereas I think, you know, in the description, No Joy being that it sort of also kind of fell into a, you know, sort of a vibrant scene accidentally almost. But yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know. I kind of agree with that statement too, though, the idea like, well, when you don't care, that's when it sort of happens and whatever. But I mean, there's a lot of groups that just, you know, just don't, it doesn't happen, period. But yeah, I would argue that when you're trying, it certainly doesn't happen.
No.
It's either you have the mojo or you don't. And, unfortunately, that's a very difficult metric to weigh as to what to cut your losses on, is what I would say.
Yep. It's funny because their records all look good too, like these early records.
Yeah, like everything, again, I'm amazed how much there is. Like you had mentioned this group, No Joy, to me in past because of your his cousin, right? Being in the drummer or whatever.
Yeah.
But I just didn't put two and two together. But
Well, it was so funny because, like, we knew, like, obviously I knew my cousin.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I knew that he played in this pop punk band, and then he was, like, all of a sudden in No Joy, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I know these people from their other band, Bad Flirt. Like, it's so, how did my cousin wind up in this? Like, obviously, it's Montreal, it's punk, it's, like, how people meet, but I was just like, this is so weird that, like, these two seemingly disparate parts of my life are coming together.
Yeah, I get what you mean. It's like worlds colliding. Yeah.
Yeah.
The, yeah, again, I just wish I knew or had more experiences with these, like with these people or bands specifically, because unfortunately I don't, but a lot of what, again, a lot of what she mentioned at points, especially the Montreal centric stuff is very much of a time. And she was talking about specific years when I was like, yeah, that was definitely periods when I was, you know, whatever, going through there every now and again, and I'm shocked I never encountered this band. Because even you guys bring up, like, AIDS Wolf, which, of course, I'm familiar with, and I believe you guys played with, right? Or no, they were just on that mental show.
No. We brought them in. Or
was opening for
They opened for us at Hidden World Live.
There we go. I knew it was one of the two, because it was at Transact, but I couldn't remember. But, I feel like I've seen them.
When B wore the band violin shirt and he stood in front of Owen Pallett the whole time.
I believe he still owns that t-shirt and wears it frequently. I didn't remember which show. But anyway, point being, of an era, we're talking about bands like this. And like, yeah, AIDS Wolf was definitely one I remember. But yeah, somehow don't know this group.
Well, you know, Cancer Bats is like named kind of in reference to AIDS Wolf, right?
Yeah, I remember hearing that as well, yeah. Never understood that connection, but yeah, I do recall something about that way back when.
I think they must have been friends, right? Like that.
I would think. I don't know. I believe there's Montreal connections there. I don't know what they are, but
Montreal's a small city.
Well, I know of one. Yeah. Anyway, this is nothing for the listeners to feast on. But yeah, I definitely, as being like sort of mutual friends with people, know of connections there. But I don't know what the band's connections are, is what I mean to say.
Yeah. Nor do I, Chris. Nor do I.
Yeah.
Should we pick points now?
Yeah. Whatever you want to do here. What do we got?
What do we got? What do we got? What do we got? Sorry, just calling it up on my iTunes because I accidentally deleted the actual notes on my desk. All right. I guess I kind of would love to talk about Babes in Toyland and L7. We haven't really talked about too much on this show. But also just like, you know, two bands that played huge roles in my musical development at the time, and two bands that I think fortunately have both kind of been appreciated as time has gone on, maybe even more so, or definitely differently than they were appreciated, I think, at the time by a wide swath of the audience.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm with you on that. Both have, I never followed a lot of their career, but there definitely are records by both bands that are very, that were very impactful and that I feel very highly about. So of course, you know, for me, L7's, I'm assuming yours might be similar, or maybe the one later, but Bricks Are Heavy was the one that I first heard. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy to see that Slash had a piece of this. I didn't realize that. I thought this was a major, which I guess got reissued on London and Reprise or whatever,
Slash was a major at that point.
Yeah, that's right. They did have their hands in. But I had an older friend, again, like who we were kind of interested in music. This came out in 92, so I remember sort of, I don't know, whatever. Like I had a friend kind of, like a few records this year were very, very like highlight moments, but this was certainly one. And I still, like, I mean, I haven't visited this record in a good while, but Shitlist is an incredible song still. I can know that from memory.
It's hard as fuck.
Pretend We're Dead, great radio song. I remember that used to get played on the radio.
Yeah, and also the video got played a little bit too.
That's right, yeah, well, yeah.
You know what the weirdest thing when you listen to that song I was playing the other day is that, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. And also, like, when you hear that song, it reminds me of Bad Religion, 20th Century Digital Boy.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
You know, like, it's obviously, yeah, like, poppier, I think, in their thing than Bad Religion's one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that song's fucking sick. But that, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
It's kind of weird, though.
It's kind of, I don't know. I don't.
Like, was that again, ever attempt at writing a pop song?
Probably, who knows?
Because they're a hard band, right?
Like, yeah, it's otherwise pretty heavy. Yeah, this record's pretty heavy. This is a good record. I mean, I still look at the track list. I can't, there's a couple, like maybe a few songs I don't really recall, but by title, but the rest of them definitely have moments. And yeah, it's worth checking out. I haven't revisited it again in ages, but you know, it looks weirdly pretty decent too for a record that contains like a fire motif, like a flames, yeah, motif. But anyway, yeah, this record, and
Brett Kurwitz has got a writing credit on it.
Really? What song?
On Scrap.
Oh, okay. Wow. Where were they from? Are they from LA? Or are they?
Yeah, they're an LA band.
Okay, I never knew that. I never.
The first record's on Epitaph.
And oh yeah, I do remember that. And it was mixed and engineered by Butch Vig. Look at that.
Yep.
So as was, you know, the '90s, those early '90s years. So he had a pretty good run in that year, in those years. When you think like Nevermind and then this, and there's, yeah.
Oh, Pixies, like he was the guy, Pixies, right? Like, yeah, he was, yeah, the he was like the 40 of his day.
Yeah, the Metro Boomin. Yeah.
Metro Boomin. He was Metro Boomin.
Speaking of, yeah, a relative term for 2018, he was the Metro Boomin of, yeah, 92.
Yeah. Which is Metro Boomin 92.
But which yeah,
turned out a punk shirt like that.
I was just thinking the same thing. I agree. If someone wants to do that, by all means, send us some.
Send us a design. We'll make it.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, cool record. On to Babes in Toyland briefly while we're talking about these records.
Yes.
For me, the record of theirs, which again is probably very similar in year. I'm looking it up now in the resource because I don't own it. Yeah, it is. It's the same year. Is the record Fontanelle, which I was am still a very big fan of. The track one on that, Bruce Violet, is incredible still to this day. And yeah, I love this record.
Yeah.
But again, haven't listened to it in a good while, but I really like this record. I prefer it a lot more to the L7 record, frankly. But and it looks cooler, if that's any other vote of confidence. But yeah, those were the two records from these groups that I knew. And then I didn't really follow them. No, I'm looking at other stuff. Nothing really peaks. With L7, though, I knew the, what's that LP? Hungry for Stink, I remember when that came out, but I don't remember.
Andre? You don't remember Andre?
No, I do. I remember that. Yeah, yeah. And Andre, the cover of this record's amazing, but I don't remember a lot of. Freak Magnet maybe seems familiar, but yeah, so I knew kind of those two LPs and then that Babes in Toyland one. But Babes in Toyland, again, these groups I never really knew a lot about, like, personally, in terms of like where they're from or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
what about you? Also, Babes in Toyland put out one of my favorite splits of all time, which is the Babes in Toyland Poison Idea split on Insipid vinyl that came out of Australia, and my god, it's a sick split, with Poison Idea doing one of their Gizem covers and Babes in Toyland doing Catatonic.
That's really funny, yeah, because I think this is, maybe we brought up last week.
But yeah, anyway, yeah, last week, yeah.
I'm amazed that this exists, but I'm psyched on it. And it has a
copy
the
of it.
Quintessential Poison Idea band photo on the cover.
Yep, the classic photo.
Actually, it's funny. The covers are just band photos on both sides.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a cool vibe, actually.
It's pretty cool.
Seems like a silly vibe, but if you see it, it's cool. And you can't fuck with that Poison Idea band photo. It's just, that's too much. But yeah, I don't have this. I'm jealous that you do. The fact that they do, the idea that this split exists and their input on it, the Poison Idea input, is a Gizem cover.
I know, it's so fucking sick.
is a very huge vibe. Yeah, that's a power move if ever there was.
We didn't talk about this, but maybe we should slip it in now because we've already diverted too much into Poison Idea territory. I did watch the Poison Idea documentary finally.
Nice.
Which, if you have not seen, Chris, I will. We will come over whenever you want.
Yeah,
and we will watch the Poison Idea documentary again because it is a fantastic documentary. Legacy of Destruction. The documentary, you know, the editing and stuff, I a little disjointed at times for me. But as far as a movie and the footage and the interviews, it's mandatory viewing to see that stuff. And it's there's some fantastic stuff, but like you can really see in that documentary, like that's like the realest band around, you know, and they didn't give a fuck. And there's some footage of them playing like huge, like a No on Nine rally that Nirvana headlined in Portland that's just fucking ginormous, full of people, and Poison Idea's rocking out on stage. Like there's some cool ass footage in that documentary.
Nice. Gotta see it.
Definitely check that out if you are a fan of the band, because if you're not, you should really give them another shot, you know?
Yes, for sure.
It's worth your time. We got a couple tracks. A couple tracks up there.
Yep.
Your point, Chris.
All right. Let's jump into sidebar really quick on Babes in Toyland. I didn't realize there's a Bruised Violet single, which Southern Records released in 92. And I need to get this. Anyway.
How much is it on the cogs?
Not much. Very, very reasonable.
All right.
Highest is 20, under 20, and then we're talking like maybe $5 record. This is going to be one where I look to dig now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It happens. They come up. Like, look at me. I'm living proof.
As far as points, though, sorry to jog around here. the one thing I laughed about was the because you were talking sort of bonding over the fact that you both had your sort of I guess now in hindsight, not real zines that you were trying to do interviews to get into shows for. I think your intention, I'm assuming, was to actually do it, and it just never came to be. But
yes, I was hoping to one day do it. But then it's when you're like sit down with that dictaphone and you start trying to transcribe it.
Oh, worst. Yeah.
It's like, especially when you're like 13, you're like, I'm never going to do this.
Yeah.
I wonder, when I do a zine interview, I'm like, there's a 50% chance this thing is never coming out. Like, I'm not talking about like, you know, a well-established scene. I'm talking about like when someone's like, yeah, I'm just starting a fan scene. Do you want to do an interview for it? I'm like, oh yeah, sure. I'm like, there's like a 50% chance this thing never sees the light of day.
But yeah, so I was amused by that. Nothing really to say other than that. I just found that very funny and bonded over that. Trying to think here of a really good, I have a point to sort of like jokingly talk about, but I don't know how much we could flog it. I'm trying to find one that's got more substance really quickly here. I've never been a fan of this band, but I thought her story about, I don't know what she's describing, like buying things off of Blink, and yet the members had all these picks, and she was queuing into records off of the band members' picks.
Yeah, Blink's picks.
It's almost like a fan club kind of vibe or whatever, but I think that's kind of neat. And the fact that they were actually, again, these records in hindsight aren't, you know, the deepest of things, but Get Up Kids, Jimmy Eat World, and Fugazi are all kind of not what I would have expected. Maybe certainly not Fugazi, but you know, like it just, I don't know, for the era that she's speaking of, I'm kind of shocked that these were ones that they were putting out there.
Yeah. Like I think once again, like not as much Fugazi, but certainly, you know, like Jimmy Eat World, like, you know, now it seems obvious, but at the time, like they're part of the reason now it seems obvious.
Yeah. Agreed.
And there were, you know, Get Up Kids as well. Like that's a band that wasn't like kicking in, like, the mainstream's door at that point. Like it took kind of bands like Blink-182 kind of putting them on to give them that moment where they were.
Yeah. Just, I didn't realize, like, I don't know. I always think that's kind of interesting when you see big groups do that. I wasn't aware of any, I don't know, the Blink that I've never been a Blink fan. So like, I've never paid too much attention, but I do think that's kind of interesting. I just wasn't aware that there was any fan club thing like that they would actually shout out other groups. And actually makes me think nowadays, like does that really happen, you know, in that same context much? Is that fan club thing like kind of toast now, that idea of?
Yeah, like maybe the fan club thing is toast, but like you still have like artists like shouting out their favorite artists on Twitter and social media now, right?
That's true.
It's just evolved.
Yeah, it's more real time rather than however you want to put this. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'll take the next point.
Yeah, go. Give her.
I think I want to talk about that smell scene.
All right.
Because I think that is, you know, like we kind of talk about it, like what a cool place that was. What a cool time that would have been to be down there. We got to play the smell, but it was a little bit later on when those bands were kind of already popping. But, you know, like a scene to kind of produce that kind of diversity of sounds is always fascinating to me because scenes tend to be built around, you know, similarities. But yet that scene, it's not a lot of it's, you know, very similar from one band to the other.
Yeah, like we had first been someone had contacted us with regards to. Was it a GoFundMe or something? It was like to save the smell,
I believe.
I'm not sure if that campaign is still going or not. I'm trying to look it up now as we're sort of discussing it. And they very well may have. But, well, it seems to be going, yeah. So I didn't have a lot of awareness of this. I had never been, still never been. But so only from you talking about it initially and then knowing some bands, again, she talks a little bit. I wasn't aware of things seemingly like Beach House and stuff like that seem to also maybe not be like rooted in there, but she's discussing, at least in the interview, there was some kind of mention of that or maybe I'm off on that. I don't know.
I guess the smell is not saved at all. Sorry.
No, it's done.
No, we're not looking at that. No, it's still going, but I think they're trying to raise $1.4 million.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm looking up an entry here on Wiki. But anyway, yeah, so I don't know a lot about it. Obviously, No Age I'm familiar with. I don't know a lot of these other groups. But so you're saying the diversity in sound.
Well, Mico doesn't sound like No Age, who certainly don't sound like Abe Vigoda, who, you know, don't sound like Best Coast at all, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like everyone was doing something different. Like their take on independent music, DIY music, was different. And you know, and I guess that's probably true with Toronto, even when I think about it around the same time. Like, you know, none of us sounded the same, but it just seems like none of us were, you know, going as out there in the sort of DIY punk scene as bands there were.
Well, there's another way from an outsider I could I could cue that up, which is that I would say, I don't know if these groups were either working together, so to speak, but it just does not or didn't seem that way for many years in Toronto anyway.
Well, some bands so, it did.
Some bands. Well, some bands did, but what I mean is, you know, there was no – I agree with you in that there were some very important groups in the quote-unquote like contemporary Toronto of the last whatever, 20 years, let's say.
Yeah.
I don't know, some records I think are really strong and like some of my favorite records. But if I think of something like, say, The Hidden Cameras, or I think of something like, well, obviously your records, or I don't know, like as far as hardcore punk, there's good stuff, like obviously really good stuff based on what the show is. But then there's all their, you know, Dave Martin's own The Deadly Snakes, which cannot not be mentioned.
Yes.
But yeah, so there's been some big ones that sonically are not in league with one another. But it's never for me, maybe being not hugely like immersed in it, like in terms of like being from it, Toronto, that is, but it's never seemed to be in unison, so to speak, up until later. Like I would say the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, it seems to have been, or actually maybe I shouldn't say that because you're even judging by that comp you shouted out earlier, the fucked up comp. So maybe, yeah, the last 8 years or so, it seems to have gotten a lot more, I don't know, that people are not doing their own thing separate. It seems to be sort of a, what's the word I'm looking for?
A united scene.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't even go that far, but I would say
a united certainly scene.
Well, there you go. Those are your words. I don't know how I would phrase it, but
no,
not that.
I know. Chris, I'm afraid this is going to be our last point this evening because Camden has just walked into the recording.
Special guest.
It's a little late at night to break that fourth wall right now, so I have to put him back to bed. How do they get in touch with us here, Chris?
All right, turnoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next week. Oh, and next week on the show, we'll be talking Jesse Michaels from Operation Ivy. How nuts is that? All right. Bye, everyone.